This is WJR, the Goodwill Station, with studios in the Fisher Building, Detroit. Stay tuned now to the Goodwill Station for a political program featuring Eric Huss. And immediately following that, at 9:45, we will return with CBS Radio to the UN Emergency Session. Wednesday evening, you heard an address by the President of the United States, Dwight D. Eisenhower. Tonight, in accordance with our interpretation of the rules and regulations established by the Federal Communications Commission, the Goodwill Station presents Eric Huss, Socialist Labor Party candidate for the President of the United States. The correct Eastern Standard Time in 10 seconds will be 9:30.
By transcription.
At this time, we bring you an address by Eric Huss, presidential candidate of the Socialist Labor Party, speaking from New York City. Mr. Huss.
My fellow citizens, here we are again on the very brink of another world war. The crisis that has finally come to a head in the Middle East and that has erupted in a small war is one of a succession of nerve-jangling crises that have recently shaken the world. A year ago, it was Indochina. Before that, it was Formosa. And before that, Korea. Every one of these crises has threatened to light the fuse of world war. And the present conflict between Egypt on the one hand and Israel, Britain, and France on the other is obviously the most dangerous of all. Now, I say obviously because this war impinges on and involves rival interests that are contending for the richest imperialist prize of all, the fabulously rich oil deposits of the Middle East. The other night, Mr. Eisenhower solemnly promised the American people that this country will not become involved militarily in the Middle East war. I suppose many of you were reassured by the president's words. Actually, history shows, and I shall prove to you in the next few minutes, that such promises are worthless, that it is the worst kind of a mistake to bank your hope for peace on the promises of politicians. You may recall in this connection that Woodrow Wilson promised to keep us out of war. His campaign slogan in 1916 was, "He kept us out of war." But within weeks after Mr. Wilson was inaugurated for his second term, American boys were fighting and dying in France. Again, we trusted the promise of Franklin Delano Roosevelt to keep us out of World War II. In 1940, almost on the eve of the presidential election, Mr. Roosevelt sought to ensure a third term by making what sounded like an explicit promise. He said, "I say again and again and again, I will not send your boys to fight in a foreign war." Well, it has been charged that Mr. Roosevelt had his tongue in his cheek when he made this promise. Maybe so. But the point is this. Whether such promises are made sincerely or insincerely, they cannot be kept. Woodrow Wilson was unquestionably a high-minded man, but he simply could not cope with the war-breeding forces that are generated. Now note this, that are generated by the outmoded, imperialistic, capitalist system. What are these war-breeding forces? What is it in the capitalist system that makes recurring crises and recurring wars inevitable? Well, Woodrow Wilson himself gave us an answer to this question. You may recall that to win support for World War I, we were told it was a war to make the world safe for democracy and a war to end war. But this was just ideological window dressing. After it was over, President Wilson gave us the real reason for the war. Speaking in St. Louis, Missouri, September 5th, 1919, he said, I quote, "My fellow citizens, is there any man here or any woman, let me say, is there any child here who does not know that the seed of war in the modern world is industrial and commercial rivalry? This war, in its inception, Mr. Wilson continued, was a commercial and industrial war. It was not a political war. The seed of the jealousy, the seed of the deep-seated hatred, was hot, successful, commercial, and industrial rivalry, unquote. Now, some of you may say this may have been true about the First World War and even about the Second, but the situation today is different. No, it is not different, not basically. And once again, let me back up my point by bringing to the witness stand not a socialist, but a capitalist authority. What I am about to quote is an official U.S. Navy document prepared by the Office of Naval Intelligence and reproduced in part in the Congressional Record, April 15, 1947. It reads, I quote, "Realistically, all wars have been for economic reasons. To make them politically and socially palatable, ideological issues have always been invoked. Any possible future war will undoubtedly conform to historical precedent. Present difference with our world neighbors," meaning Soviet Russia and her satellites, "now in the diplomatic stage we hope can be kept there. But after all, war is merely diplomacy by force of arms," unquote. Now, superficial evidence to the contrary notwithstanding, it is not Russian military aggression that our capitalists fear. What our capitalists fear is Russian economic competition. They are afraid the Russians will take over the capitalist markets in Asia, the Middle East, Africa, and South America. They know that if they lose these markets, their system is done for. Now, that is why, to borrow the boastful phrase of John Foster Dulles, our rulers take us again and again to the brink of war. Under the capitalist system, the workers, who constitute the overwhelming majority of the population, receive in wages only enough to buy back a fraction of their product. Now, this chronic lack of buying power by the workers is the key contradiction in capitalism. It is the reason for the tendency to pile up surpluses. Surpluses that must be sold abroad if they are not to pile up in the warehouses at home and cause stagnation and eventually economic collapse. It doesn't matter what the capitalist politicians promise. This need for foreign markets to keep the capitalist system going at home exerts a compulsion on both the capitalists and their political agents to take the fateful risks that lead to war. Now, obviously, in view of the awful portent of the hydrogen bombs and of such weapons as the guided missile, it is terribly urgent that we escape from this dangerous pattern of economic competition and war. The Socialist Labor Party has a program for doing precisely this, and I appeal to all serious-minded Americans to ponder this program carefully. The solution to the problem of war and to all the grave problems besetting our society is a relatively simple one. Our capitalists and their political henchmen try to make the problem of war and peace seem enormously complex, much too complex for the average person to understand. Thus, both Mr. Eisenhower and Mr. Stevenson are saying to us, in effect, "Foreign policy questions are too complicated for you voters. Trust me, I'm an expert in these matters. Trust me to keep the country out of war." Well, that's precisely what we've been doing for a long time. And as I have already demonstrated, the record shows that the promises of would-be peace statesmen are worthless. Isn't it time that we abandoned this practice of voting for candidates on faith? Both Mr. Eisenhower and Mr. Stevenson promised to keep us out of war. Yet both of these gentlemen are passionate supporters of the capitalist system, which, as I have shown, fosters the economic competition that leads to war. Now, I said the solution to war, the solution embodied in the Socialist Labor Party program, is a relatively simple one. It is. We reason this way. Since the cause of war is economic competition, and since such competition is inherent in the capitalist economic system, then it follows that the cause must be removed. The capitalist system must be abolished. In place of this competitive society, we must build a society based on cooperation. We must build socialism. Now, under socialism, and I'm speaking about genuine socialism, not the bureaucratic despotism mislabeled socialism in Russia. Under genuine socialism, we will produce things to satisfy human needs instead of for sale and the profit of a handful of capitalists. And thus we will put an end, once and for all, to the problem of surpluses, and hence to the need to fight wars for foreign markets and sources of raw materials. When the industries are owned socially and the workers have a democratic mastery of their tools and products, in short, when the workers get back, directly and indirectly, all that they produce, the economic cause of war will have been eliminated forever. In place of war-breeding competition, there will be peace-inspiring cooperation between the nations of the world. Now, many people thought a few years ago that the United Nations was the best hope of peace. The Socialist Labor Party disagreed. We pointed out that the United Nations didn't even begin to eliminate the economic competition that leads to war. We held that whenever any ruling class, be it a capitalist ruling class or a communist bureaucratic ruling class, believes its vital interest called for war, war it will be. And now we have proof of this in the action of Israel, France, and Britain. They have defied the United Nations. And you can bet your bottom dollar right now that the United Nations will do nothing effective to stop them. If it tried, it would almost certainly mean the end of the United Nations. And many other people thought the Western Alliance was the key to peace. The Socialist Labor Party disagreed here, too. Not only does the Western Alliance represent capitalist interests that are opposed to the interest of the Russian bureaucrats, but within the Western Alliance, the capitalist nations are competing hotly for the world markets among themselves. The fact that Britain and France defied the United States and secretly prepared their attack on Egypt is but a reflex of the economic competition that foredooms all such capitalist alliances. No, there is no solution to war possible within the capitalist system. The solution, the only solution possible, is the simple but drastic one of reconstructing our society on socialist lines. Now, some of you may say, what about Russia? How can we deal with Russia? Well, our only hope of stopping the expansion of Russian imperialism is to win over the oppressed masses of the world. And quite simply, a capitalist America can't do that. A socialist America could. Capitalism is hated by the oppressed and exploited masses of the world. Russian imperialism has made headway precisely because it has traded on this hate. But now the Russian bureaucrats stand unmasked. In Eastern Europe, they are quite obviously losing not merely their dictatorial control, but also their ideological influence. Now, this is an hour when a socialist America could once again make this nation the shining example and hope of freedom that it was after 1776. We can make this a socialist America whenever we, the workers of brain and brawn, make up our collective mind to do so. And thanks to the fact that we have a constitution in America that, in effect, legalizes revolution, we can make this change peacefully. The Socialist Labor Party program shows the way. Now study this program. You can get some literature on building a socialist world of peace and plenty absolutely free by writing to this address, Socialist Labor Party, Box 76, New York 38, New York. That's Socialist Labor Party, Box 76, New York 38, New York. Now, one final word. You personally can strike a blow for peace by voting for the Socialist Labor Party ticket next Tuesday. Vote under the emblem of the upraised arm and hammer, the emblem of constructive socialism in America. In some states, the Socialist Labor Party is not on the ballot. In such states, we ask you to write in the name of Eric Haas for president. Thank you.
You have heard an address by Eric Haas, presidential candidate of the Socialist Labor Party, speaking from New York City.
The preceding was transcribed. America listens most to the CBS Radio Network.
This is WJR, the Goodwill Station, Detroit. The Lions Press Box with Bob Powell is heard 15 minutes before all Detroit Lions football games. There'll be interviews with celebrities, inside stories on Lion and other professional football stars, and last-minute pregame highlights. Hear Lions Press Box 15 minutes before all Lions games on WJR. It's 9:45.